interrupting the current neo-Ucronial climate-challenged, behaviorally controlled, energy-starved, alien-invaded, nuclear-glowing, postulated cricketism to bring you behind the woodshed. This is Cricketude Busting Episode BTWRLM 581. And remember, being free is not a spectator sport. So get you behind the woodshed. And to that end, we that study may find democracy isn't what we thought it is. And I explained it's being a weapon. Here's someone else that finds himself at the edge of the stinking abyss. Looking in at it, what I've explained much more in depth in prior broadcasts, whether it's the dual use of turmoil, the global financial system, or leaders hell-bent on imposing foreign UN-sanctified sustainability. As I have to say before we get into this article, and it's a little bit of a long essay, we'll read a bit of it. One of the criticisms of the article that I have to watch out for here is that in its language critique, what it condemns in the subject matter, the author hasn't grown out or doesn't know to avoid the linguistic programming that traps us and acts as a virus infecting others with its disease as it's recommunicated. And he still sees this, even though I believe he intuitively sees what's in the stinking abyss. So it kind of cautions us on how we describe what we see, not to get into the convenient words that are being used all the time. That is what's promoting the thing that they want to get in people's minds. The title of this is Democracy of Hypocrisy. With regard to democracy, we must remember that all nation states in a current predatory neoliberal capitalist system are comprised of and complicit in the excesses of that system of political economy, including Iran and other BRICS members. They are at least complicit to the extent that no country has yet found a way to escape the financial tentacles of the globalist Bank of International Settlements. A second reason for making a critical analysis lies in Mr. Putin and Mr. Xi's acknowledgement and of praise for the potential beneficial role of the UN. They express devotion to the United Nations and advocate the strengthening of that organization. But this does not take into account that the UN and its affiliated organizations are all too often influenced by globalists, non-state groups such as the CFR, Council of Foreign Relations, and the WEF, the World Economic Forum, and by foundations such as the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, the Rockefeller Foundation, and others, and also by certain unnamed shadow groups that we can occasionally catch a glimpse of here and there. The ultimate purpose of many branches of the globalist mafia is the same: the promotion of the eugenicist model in which they dominate the will other people suffer, and which is based on one world philosophy of government and culture. Sometimes these branches, their methods will differ. They will sometimes collaborate and sometimes compete. A first step to salvation is to realize that no ordinary person's vote is comparable to those that the string pullers are able to buy. People that need to learn something about history and quit spending time on politicians who work for political parties that give people only the illusion of choice. People should concentrate on insisting the communities they live in and help them become autonomous, transparent, and resilient. And I just wanted to highlight this without saying too much. Those are the words that start planting the seeds, that those are the things you want to do, yet that's what the occupier uses. Those are codes for what the methodology by which they take over places. So, notwithstanding what the truth is that I've already said a lot of what he said here, my observations, I just want to call attention just right here, and I won't call it out anymore. The use of these words that are being used to foster and encourage the usurpation and occupation of the very thing he's talking about is what I'm a little bit of critique in, and we have a tendency of people to continue that language. And as I've shown before, we have to stop using that language. Yes, it's a censorship, but there's a reason why. And we talk about a mind virus. These words become the planting of the seeds, and they've always seemed to find fertile ground. Why? Because they're repeated by everyone, even someone who would object to the very condition that's coming up. So back to the article, read through what this author sees himself over time in someplace else than what I've found behind Woodshed. Same stinking abyss. We're standing shoulder to shoulder here. Then at least a genuine resistance at a local level can take place, because transparency is always a poison to the exercise of arbitrary force by those in power. In fact, a transparent system of government, no matter what the type it might be, is to be preferred to the opaque democracy. But this is what we now have everywhere, the democracy of power-hungry hypocrites for hypocrites and by hypocrites. The democracy of hypocrisy. So I just wanted to inquire here on this statement. And again, you heard all the little cue words of transparency. I told you that they want to see you to see right through them. So in that regard, I'm not necessarily able to agree with this author. However, he's explaining a different point on the surface that most people do here. But I want, what if on this, we talked about this democracy, I said it's a weapon. What if democracy is a plan? Direct, participatory, and ineffectual. And transparency is the goal, that the masses see right through the deception. And what is planned is a sustainable, transparent, and resilient hypocrisy by consent of the governed, the hypocritical, clueless communities against which the occupiers are transparent and resilient. And I say that communities in a certain way because that's what they use. They're after your community. They don't care about you. They don't care about your property or anything like that. It's about the direct participatory democracy, which is the community. It's the entirety. So seeing similarly to my prior explanations, this writer is intuitively standing on the edge of the stinking abyss, shoulder to shoulder with many of us, but mentally still conditioned yet by this linguistic dissonance created through the decades-long cognitive warfare that we are suffering. This is not a judgment on this point either, but a fact that each of us suffers to varying degrees. It's very tough to drop the predatory, sustainable lingo until you see what the enemies of all people do with it. And it is largely defeated by studying these and other subject matter areas enough to reprogram yourself with enough truth and protective checks and balances to guard against any failure of what you thought was so turning out not to be. That any mistake is not fatal or the jeopardy too harsh as you correct the misapprehension and proceed accordingly. So remember, I've offered as well, it isn't enough to identify the enemy, but we be able to prove how and where you are different, distinct. Offer as one part the land disposal law because it'll allow you to do that. You talk about man on the land. I've explained how you do that without using it as a cliche phrase. It's not about your phrase. They can toss that. They can disregard that. You use the right language underneath that, and all of a sudden that they're not going to have those folks that you're going to have a supposed opinion under official authority are going to be silent against it. So it's in that regard, it's a bit difficult to have no property and be happy, correct? But that's what they want us to do. When all your language insists on property and the right to possession and enjoyment, which for at least in America, no government nor governance can lawfully defeat and no democracy can lawfully infringe. Instead of transparency, the requirement is to keep the law, to keep the peace, or you have to consent to war, especially if it is transparent to you. Because you only know them when you see them, right? Or what appears to be covers up something else we are not able to see, maybe. This is another problem. The sleight of hand type of thing. You heard Craig on his broadcast read Pee in a Cup. That's the kind of thing we're talking about a bit here as well. Always. This is always the method. We are so proud. Biden's reaction to Hunter verdict. Biden's younger son are charged with 3 felonies based on a 2018 firearm purchase while being a crack cocaine addict and lying about it on a gun control form. Tuesday's verdict made him the first son of a sitting president to be convicted in a federal court. Again, I'm not talking about Hunter himself. I'm going to be discussing a cover over which our the so-called democracy works through to bring on more burden, and we just kind of follow through with it. Jill and I love our son. We are so proud of the man he is today, Biden said in a statement. Quote, I will accept the outcome of this case and will continue to respect the judicial process as Hunter considers an appeal. So whatever Hunter's done, whatever the laptop that didn't exist had on it, is being covered by this case. But what is being attacked by the case charging fraudulent filing out of a form, the form number 4473, from an administrative agency, is legalizing that form without a proper challenge. And so when you see this president supporting democracy as he sees it. They're actually supporting the oppression. And this is how, that's why he's going to go ahead and allow it. And this still goes on appeal. Hunter's case aside, look at what happened inside the case and what this was really all about. It was simply, they claim now after the fact, a misfiling of a form. So I want to hold our minds on, well, what this is all apparently, that if you look careful too, hold your mind to this, that it was Haley who found the illegally purchased Cobra revolver in Hunter's truck and threw it in the trash, believing the gun had been stolen. And this is a presumption and a belief that seems to start this whole thing. Not any tax problem, abuse, drugs, treason, or whatever all else we've heard, but lying on a form 4473, the presumption that the gun was illegally purchased. It wasn't stolen. But it suffers from the defect of a subjective nature determined ex post facto. And, you know, I'm going to be saying some phrases without explanation. I hope you keep track. These terms or these conditions or violations in through the whole case never see the light of day relative to what they're doing if you properly challenge the form. These all should be violations of law as well, I would think, and they should have been brought forward even as a defense. Again, taking aside who we think Hunter was and wasn't, what he didn't do, presuming him innocent, whatever all that, this is an interesting case about what they end up doing with this case relative to a form. And I'm astonished how many people in gun carriers, gun advocates would support this form. And I'm not going to be exhaustive in this, but I want to point these things out. Again, the news is telling us something. And a lot of times I see things that are different than a lot of people, I suppose. And I try to explain what I see in there. The people are not responsive in the right way. But I at least want to discuss this condition a little bit, even though I'm not going to be able to get into it. I'm not going to get all the arguments. This is what comes to my mind when I was reading this through this. Not really even interested in the case, but more about when this ATF form popped up and how simple it is for lots of people to get involved and how, up until now, how little the prosecutions were upon this form. Even if they found out that you lied, they really didn't want to press much. This is almost going to be an open season, if you will. But we can read about the form, ATF form 4473. Let me offer two. Again, administrative agency. They promulgate rules upon an enacted law. This agency promulgated a rule about the form, and it was allowed. I don't know about allowed. It's been used. I'll say that much. And this is what people had to start to use. Breaking news is, though, the Supreme Court, on challenge, it may not be that there's any authority in this agency to do things. Well, there's no authority within the agency to do things outside of what the law said it was constituted to do. And bump stocks just popped up. As the Supreme Court, I understand, I didn't get a chance to read it, but the bump stocks now have a law, the rule has been thrown down because it was promulgated in excess of ATF's authority. It was a straightforward comment. Bump stocks are not machine guns, on its face sounds stupid, doesn't it? I'm going to make an assertion that a bump stock is a machine gun, the gun that is very well regulated by the ATF. So get back to the form. I say that because when you challenge things better, I'm not even saying that case is challenged correctly. If you challenge better, then you might get these agencies to find that these agencies had no authority in the beginning. Again, that's challenging the authority. This essentially is a big challenge of authority case about the bump stocks and all this other stuff. But here, firearms transaction records for the ATF form 4473 is a 7-page form prescribed by the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, ATF, required to be completed when a person proposes to purchase a firearm from the Federal Firearms License, FFL, holder, such as a gun dealer. The form 4473 contains the purchaser's name, address, date of birth, government-issued photo ID, national instant criminal background check system, background check transaction number, and a short affidavit stating that the purchaser is eligible to purchase firearms under federal law. It also contains the make, model, or serial number of the firearm. Lying on the form is a felony punishable by up to 5 years in prison, in addition to fines, even if the transaction is denied by the NICS, the National Instant Criminal Background Check System. Prosecutions are rare in the absence of a felony committed with the gun purchased. I think that's important to understand here. I want to make a point about this. In the absence of another crime, these prosecutions are minimal. They're rare, it says here. The federal prosecutors prosecuted an average of 32 cases per year, including 24 in 2013, 15 in 2014, and 20 in fiscal year 2015. Interesting. I want to tie that into the point of the fiscalness. This is tax law, if you will. Fiscal is taxation law. And it's tied to that. And that's what I want to also point out. So I bring up the idea about a felony usually is involved. It is described here by some to be a form that must be deciphered. 7 pages of questions. The review panel, though, found form 4473 did not implicate the Second Amendment. This is very interesting to me. This is what happens in the courts. They focus on one question, and they qualify it, and then the rest of the question goes down the toilet. No one looks at it to qualify it any further. That is my challenge to this. I challenge that despite the analysis that the Second Amendment is not implicated, the analysis doesn't end. A deeper inquiry is needed if justice is to be done relative to the right to bear arms and a violative forced association with the federal agency. And understand this is only federal firearms licenses, intrastate. It doesn't require this. So this is another clue. Maybe that's where you need to go. However, I'm not going to talk about all that either. The thing I wanted to bring forward is when you're doing an analysis, they say that the Second isn't implicated, so now we don't have a problem. But what about your presumption of innocence? You go look at the form, and they're imposing you the presumption of guilt that you're going to, by your testimony, by signing the paper, say that you are not. So what about your presumption of innocence? Is that implicated? What about the Fifth Amendment against self-incrimination, in particular, where in the intent of the form is reviewed after the fact, as you found in Hunter Biden's case? I'm not caring about the case. I'm looking at what's going on, the dynamic of the case and the timing and all the things relative to the filing of an agency form, of all things. Well, what about is the right to alter or abolish implicated here? The presumed innocent at the point I can not get an arm waiting on permission is not a right to bear arms and infringes the shall not infringe part immediately, in particular where that permission is coming from the very government, which is the subject of the right to bear arms in the first place. And it does then implicate the Second Amendment, notwithstanding this panel. And we'll touch a little bit about that, the panels that are made up to do these things and the laws that are made, and more in particular, who does it, who done it, folks. It implicates the Second Amendment on those points, notwithstanding the findings of the Bar Association members panel, the 7CA panel that was discussed I'll give you the link to it in a moment here. The same members of their bar association, of which promotes sustainable development, and the non-governmental organization pushing the usurpation, which displays in the UN Plaza a pistol with a knot tied in a barrel of a gun. And while the same organization uses arms to overthrow countries under color of peacekeepers, not peacemakers, in the world of geopolitics. And I filed the ex-Twitter post that I'll send you a link to in the blogcast, you can get it, or over at Sound Minds and whoever else is syndicating those links over as we do this. Thank you all to continue doing that. I do really appreciate all the energy that goes through putting in the time to keep this word out in lots of places so people at least get to see it, even if it's just a few minutes. Dropping seeds as we can. Hopefully we're finding fertile ground, I think, is everybody's goal. And just keeping us more aware, if nothing else. And we got lots and lots of views, a lot more than we used to get. And so thank you for all your effort, all you that are doing that. And so I'll read a post that I sent more completely, but not exhaustive. I only have 280 characters. And so just get on over to the National Instant Criminal Background Check System that is part of this whole thing. See what they're looking at. The National Instant Criminal Background Check System is a background check system in the United States created by the Brady Gun Violence Prevention Act in 1993 to prevent firearms sales to people prohibited under the Act. So here you go. They're prohibited under the Act. But what if you're innocent? Why are you filling out the form? And so if you're not innocent, I mean, if you are innocent, then what? Then the form is superfluous to that. Notwithstanding this ex post facto thing, let's hold that off for a moment. But when isn't this an obstacle to you acquiring, which is not stated, but it's an implied right when you have the right to keep and bear. You have the right to acquire. And I've talked about this under mining law. You have the right to acquire in these acts, these grants. But this is a reservation to ourselves as the people. Again, remember that little joke that we're sovereign. But if you place that right, you can be. Why the ATF may not be operating within its jurisdiction the way it was established. The system was launched by the Federal Bureau of Investigation in 1998 under the system firearms dealers, manufacturers, or importers who hold a federal firearms license are required to undertake an NICS background check on prospective buyers before transferring a firearm. NICS is not intended to be a gun registry, but it is a list of persons prohibited from owning or possessing a firearm. By law, upon successful passing of the background check, the buyer's details are to be disregarded, and record, and a record of the NICS of the firearm purchase is not to be made, though the seller of the FFL holder is required to keep a record of the transaction. You can see, watch the pee in a cup. The cup's moving around. Where's the pee? Well, it's not even there because all this stuff should have really not been available to those of us that are innocent and having that right. And underneath the right to alter and abolish, who isn't innocent to go defend themselves against a maladministrated government? But it's not supposed to be a registry. This belies the very purpose for the Second Amendment, the sovereign duty to alter or abolish the government. And they do have an agent that does have a record, even if maybe some doesn't. And you tell me we can trust that they don't? Essentially, this form evidences a presumption of guilt, and it's satisfied in part by an oath of allegiance that you'll abide by the laws. And yet we're supposed to be presumed to do that already. Where are these conditions, precedent, requirements in the Second Amendment in order to keep and bear arms, which includes acquiring these arms, that the ATF or the Congress could even make an enactment of law to make a rule for? Is, again, an ongoing open challenge here. Just a question. As you've heard Grimner say it, I've said it, registration is confiscation. They claim they're not going to do a registry, but they have all that information. They know exactly what's going on. And I don't know about you, but I don't trust the government. Partly why I talk so much about it. No experience I've had that's shown at least fully that the government officials, the government or the government officials that come underneath that government are actually faithful to their oath or to the law or to just about anything else. To the obligations and duties that are on there, the implied ones like you get into grant law, land disposal law, there's a whole lot of unwritten law that's law, if you will. It's something that needs to be done. And if you can't hold on to it, then you have nothing. You start looking at this and you start tossing out the requirements of officials to do certain things, we have nothing. We have no expectation of anything. And that's what's turned into. And that's what I was pointing out relative to the Kobe Swindle. Here's the law. Here's what is supposed to be done. And if we don't have that, we're going to have nothing but mayhem and harm. And you saw it happen. So let's get back over to that panel. And this is the post on the X Twitter that I found this somebody promoting that the form was okay. So I just want to read that real quick, more completely than I did before, so you get a context of what's going on. Yesterday it says, you'll get the link in the broadcaster or any other place that you find it here around in the syndicators, a 7CA panel held that this ATF form 4473 was constitutional and didn't even implicate the text of the Second Amendment. This was what we'd consider a good panel, too, including Judge Brennan, who dissented in the ILPICA cases. Still, even Trump's judges are cucked for background checks and paperwork BS. Completing the ATF Form 4473 and adhering to its attendant truth-telling requirements is a conduct that is outside the scope of the Second Amendment's protection, not requiring application of Bruin's historical analysis framework. And they cite some cases explaining that the ATF form 4473 is a means of providing adequate and truthful information about the firearms transactions to assist the government's detection of a firearm that is either obtained for an illegal purpose or purchased by someone who is ineligible to own a firearm. Only in the most indirect way, and even then too indirectly, does Section 922A6, which is Title 18 here, they didn't say it, but that's Title 8, that's the federal crimes law, the penal laws, implicate the right to the federal, to bear arms. So you understand, I just read it in the parenthetical part, but someone who is ineligible presumes you to be ineligible until you fill out that form, until you qualify, that they can qualify that form, until you pledge an oath of allegiance to that agency through that form, whether it be the FBI and the NICS or to the ATF. So this is things that I've been listening for and listening on all this time. We never seem to get to these problems. No, that just doesn't implicate it. That's fine. The form's fine. And this case, this Hunter Biden case, is making it so as well, in a criminal way, in a criminal setup. Quote, neither the form nor the requirement to complete it imposes any sort of unconstitutional condition under the Second Amendment. So I would always say this when I've read this, and I want you to see it, under the Second Amendment. You see, the court says it only doesn't do it under this part. Well, how many other parts can we do the analysis is the question. And yet the courts are set up to narrow that down so they don't have to, and I think that's the great injustice against we the people. It may not be against the Second Amendment. What about any other thing that is not to be done by the government? Those are not decided here at all. They just sweep the rest underneath that rug, and you're supposed to ignore the lump you keep tripping over as you cross that carpet. The ATF Form 4473 helps screen for purchasers who run afoul of regulation informing who may lawfully possess a firearm and that kind of firearm that a person may possess. It's also a freedom. You can only have certain types as well. That's not part of this story yet. The plain text of the Second Amendment does not cover Scheidt's conduct, so there is no need to conduct a historical analysis of gun registration forms. That understand, go back to what they said. This is a good panel from Trump that believes in democracy, our democracy, that looks at myopically at the Second Amendment and said that's all we need to look at in order to sweep the rest of the potential violations under the rug. And yet we finally get a case to the Supreme Court, and when they go there more correctly or even correctly, most of the stuff it disappears, it vaporizes as being wrong. So I posted on that post, I just said I only have 280 characters. Because there is no Second Amendment implication, the analysis stops. What about the right to be presumed innocent until the government has probable cause to believe to the contrary as an impediment to the Form 473? Or how about the Fifth Amendment, the Fifth? How about implicating the right to alter or abolish? And it goes on, and I mentioned even more. I won't go and repeat them. Go back to the beginning of the broadcast. I also mentioned four or five more that are problematic in my mind. And so the form comes pursuant to a rule promulgated by the ATF pursuant to that Title 18, Section 922, supposedly, who can possess a firearm, so-called. Again, that term firearm is federally defined. How about possessing the right to an arm for the purpose of the Second Amendment to alter or abolish the maladministration of government has not been brought forward. That whole point, it gets diffuse and hidden underneath your right to hunt, or it's not a right to hunt. You don't need this type of gun to hunt. I've never heard these things come forward. And they never speak to it. It's like when you look at all the COVID swindle cases, they don't speak to the local communicable disease law. But if you look at the elements, if you've read it, you can hear the elements of the courts alluding to that they're not going to allow because those things were not followed in the law. They don't tell you where to go look. Title 18 here, we'll just get to the penal statutes, but just to say, show, let's locate it and see what the subject matter of it all would be, most all of it anyway. Title 18 of the United States Code, many U.S. state criminal codes, unlike the federal, Title 18 are based on the model penal code promulgated by the American Law Institute. Now, I'll add all are here commercial crimes when you look into it. So what's commercial about the right to keep and bear arms that anything has anything to do with them in a criminal absent a correlated crime, as I talked about before. See, if all the crimes that are done are all the penal statutes in Title 18 are mostly, I think all of them are actually commercial, you have to do one of those things with a gun in order for it to become relevant. Otherwise, they violated your right of presumed innocence. When you have used a gun, then they can go back and see, well, did you go after that license? Were you one that should have and then didn't? And what difference does it make? I mean, a criminal's not going to do any of this anyway. So it's all kind of backwards in my mind about violating the presumptions we have to be innocent until probable cause. So if it's a commercial crime, they needed to have a commercial crime. Remember, I said fiscal years they designated, and those fiscal years are the appropriated money years. Those are the, by that year, I think it's what, June or July, the years change in the middle of the year. So these are commercially related statutes and agencies as well. I just wanted to point that out if that's missed. But here, let's go back up. You saw that these model penal codes are promulgated by the American Law Institute. The word promulgated is from an agency. Agencies promulgate rules, not laws. The code, they're always impliedly telling you these are just the rules of a municipality, as I've talked to you over and over again about Title 42. And that's the United States, Washington, D.C. So we see that here it's the American Law Institute that promulgates these things. And you thought the legislators made law. So let's go look real quick on that American Law Institute, what's going on here. These folks that are making all these decisions that we think are authoritative. The American Law Institute is a research and advocacy group of judges, lawyers, and legal scholars established in 1923 to promote the clarification and simplification of United States common law and its adaptation to changing social needs. Very important statement right there, but let me go quickly back all the stuff that comes up. There is no federal common law. You hear that in the Erie versus Tompkins case in 1938, I think it was. Go read for that. There is no federal common law. And that'll start, when you're coming from, oh, there's a common law. You come from that, you think the United States is about common law, and you read that, that tweaks your brain. That's where you start to understand, maybe we don't understand this thing quite so right. Let me get back to the right reading here. There's so much to talk about here on this and a whole bunch of other stuff today. Some legal experts and the late Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia, along with some conservative commenters, have voiced concern about the ALI rewriting the law. That's the restatements and the models. The ALI drafts, approves, publishes restatements of law, principles of the law, model acts, and other proposals for law reform. The ALI is headquartered in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, of all places. So a bunch of bar members make law proposals and restatements for social change. Where's that written into the Constitution? Quite the undue influence of every legislator in the country, wouldn't you think? Stated again here, these are the same usurpers, the same members, and their bar association, of which promotes sustainable development, and the non-governmental organization pushing the foreign occupation, which displays in the UN Plaza a pistol with a knot tied in a barrel of a gun. Model social change. Social climate, why I say climate change is not about the weather. It's about the politics and social change. You're hearing this group does it. This is the group that oversaw whether or not this form is okay. Now, one Supreme Court justice wasn't cool with that. Maybe we should take a look at that. Was it right or wrong? I'm saying, I think Antonin Scalia was probably correct in all this. But then again, he came up from that bar association too. How'd he escape? Well, maybe he didn't. There was a pillow next to his head, his cold body one night, wasn't it? So would it be no wonder such a group would find the form restricting the right to require an arm until filing an oath of allegiance to a foreign power, the federal agency, because of presumption of guilt, would find that the form does not implicate the Second Amendment and limit that inquiry to find no other possible infringement, such as the numerous violations I mentioned here earlier, already in the broadcast. This condition would indicate that you live under the gun of democracy, not keeping the republic, as I've been describing here in the last few broadcasts. And we found last week about our democracy, it was Trump's phrase, promoting it, being a weapon, written by a Ted Rall, this report, in court, were all abused like Donald Trump. At any given time, millions of Americans are involved in either the criminal case or civil lawsuit at some level of a local, state, or federal court system. Very few people get to the end of their lives without coming into contact with judges and juries charged with determining the fate of their freedom and savings accounts. For most people, the legal system feels like a meat grinder. Cops and officials paid by you, the taxpayer, treat you like dirt. Court fees and lawyers bleed you dry. Your reputation is at risk. So is your sanity. Nothing makes sense. The courts impose a series of annoying and painful experiences that belie the fundamental constitutional guarantees that teach us in school and cast doubt on the assertion that we all enjoy equal justice under the law. But see, this is a misunderstanding. Let me go back. He said painful. Go look at your civil rights. 1942 USC section 1981. Pain is one of your civil rights. Go read it, folks. Like a surgical procedure, time spent in an American courtroom is best gotten through as fast as possible and quickly forgotten. Never mind a full-fledged reform, even incremental improvement of the legal system is usually unthinkable. Well, and then you just found out who's doing the reforms. And he's saying, his response is, his experience is, the reforms are actually unthinkable. Why? Because they're moving law through social change, to social change it, transform it. Sustainability. It's been in our system forever. It seems. The UN just put a term on it. A lot of agents in the United States, we think are officials, are working with Europe and these organizations to foster and encourage all that there. Again, these are all test areas. Courtrooms are tiny fiefs where there is basically no recourse to counter the word of the feudal lord, the judge, who may or may not be intelligent, well-intentioned, or kind. High-profile trial... interested in doing justice. We don't even talk that way anymore. We don't expect it seems, as I read that. But high-profile trials open a rare window into countless indignities suffered by everyday litigants and defendants. If change is possible, it can only result from the bright spotlight of a full-fledged media circus like Donald Trump's legal travails, and especially his recently concluded New York hush money trial, in which he was convicted on all 34 counts of falsifying business records in order to influence the 2016 presidential election. If we pay attention, this is an excellent chance to take notice of outrages that affect everyone, not just the former president. So just notice there, I say the news is notice. There you are. Take notice of this, and we also get to see. It raises up. And I'm doing the same thing, I feel. I was attempting to use the Hunter Biden case in the same way. It's not about these celebritudes. It's not about these people, the eye candy. No, it's about the underlying conditions that are being moved through by those. Like countless defendants before him, Trump was forced to sit through day after day for weeks of mind-numbing tedium, jury selection, motions and counter-motions, and of course, testimony. Like the rest of us, Trump could have made much better use of his time, in his case, campaigning for president, fundraising and managing his businesses, with the option to attend the proceedings if and when he desired. Since Trump didn't testify, there should have been no requirement that he attend every stultifying moment, nor should there be for you and me. Let the lawyers handle it, as many do in traffic. This has been another thing I've said. Why is it a big deal if these folks represent you, even if they're of the membership and they represent you? Why are they even talking to anybody? And in a way, I can see how that would be viable. It's almost like a bankruptcy. You get to continue doing business while we figure out how to manage your accounts so that you don't die. You're the goose, the golden egg, laid the golden egg as an entrepreneur. We don't want to kill you as we parasitically feed off of you. The same thing here. That's what the attorneys do, the lawyers, the attorneys. Just let them do it. Whatever turns out, if that's what you want to buy. But no, he's offering the same observation I have. And why don't we see that? Again, it's a big kabuki theater as well. But we get to learn from it all. Why even talk about this stuff? As I said, like looking in the carnival mirror, international carnival mirror. What doesn't happen here, we can see in other places. We can see in other things. But it's happening to us, or can happen to us. Everyone should enjoy a reasonable expectation of impartiality in court. Reality is different. Justice Merkin donated money to Biden's campaign and has a daughter who worked for a Democratic Party fundraiser. Maybe he was fair, maybe not. and the donation may amount to be tiny. This, still, is the behavior is the very definition of a conflict of interest. It demands recusal. When I was suing the Los Angeles Times, which was partly owned by the union of the LAPD, the police agency that had ordered the Times to fire me, two of the judges who considered my case were former prosecutors. They both ruled against me. No one will ever convince me that they were or could be have been fair to me or anyone else on the wrong side of the cops. Trump's case highlights the widespread phenomenon of prosecutorial overcharging in which multiple courts are larded over one another in crimes that really boil down to a single discrete act, and where relatively minor offenses are turbocharged into serious felonies using tortured interpretation of legal codes. Trump may have falsified 34 business records in the Stormy Daniels case, but this is one crime, not 34. Mislabeling a campaign expense as a legal expense is sleazy, arguably a misdemeanor, but hardly a heinous offense calling for a maximum 4 years in a state prison. These tactics are used to coerce guilty pleas from defendants who are terrorized into compliance rather than faced with the justifiable consequences of their actions. Sadly, it seems, unlike the Republican supporters of Trump, or even Trump himself, who pushed tough on crime legislation, would learn from the inherent unfairness of the legal system that abused and insulted the presumptive Republican nominee and work to improvement. But one can hope that that would happen. If they can do this to me, they can do this to anyone, Trump commented after his conviction, and they do. And I say, and don't they? The Bar Association parasitically feeding off of the people is what we're witnessing as well. What we're questioning here in this article is everything that should be happening that's not. Yet we sit as crickets on all of this. And we are attempting, when we attempt to address that corruption, we have to make very special plans on how we're going to expose it if we're not going to get that justice. That's not justice. What we're hearing, this is Trump's Our Democracy Too. Coming, listen to what here this Republicans want to infringe now. I said Republicans. Well, we focus, oh, I'm conservative Republican, all the rights, they're on the right side of the, no, they're all uniparty. New Louisiana law will criminalize approaching police under certain circumstances. Again, the other question about this democracy, challenge people's rights, so they have to fight them all the time. Put a new law in. Now the people have to fight it. You got to go to these same people to argue it, and I think the argument has to be so clear that it embarrasses the system so they can't find in favor of the government. Like this panel saying, oh, it didn't implicate the Second Amendment, when it might implicate all kinds of other violations, and then they require you to bring those violations. I stated the stuff about the so-called firearm case in that form. If you're going to challenge it, make that a list. Those things, make all those things a list. You may have a dozen more you need to bring. I just kind of what hit my mind. There's all kinds of more that came after a while. Remember, ex post facto, forced association, presumption of innocence, all that stuff. Bring it. Again, habeas corpus. I don't know if I got to that, but the habeas corpus. Maybe that's how you're restrained of your liberty to acquire the gun because of this form. Now you're supposed to be presumed innocent. They got that burden flips on the government to show that you're not. The same technique as I was telling you last week, I think it was here, relative to how you move forward, these issues that they want you to do for ID. That's commerce as well. The new Louisiana law criminalizes approaching police. Critics of a new Louisiana law, which makes it a crime to approach within 25 feet of a police officer under certain circumstances, fear that measure could hinder the public's ability to film officers, a tool that has increasingly been used to hold police accountable. Under the law, anyone who is convicted of a, quote, knowingly or intentionally, close quote, listen carefully to some of this phraseology, those of you that do this, those of you that are a witness in it, you don't have to be doing this, like auditing, you can just witness one day. You're going to have to know some of this as long as these things are laws. Right now, it's a law, so you're going to have to know this as well. Anyone who is convicted of knowingly or intentionally approaching an officer who is lawfully engaged in the execution of his official duties and after being ordered to stop approaching or retreat faces up to $500 fine, up to 60 days in jail, or both. The law was signed by Governor Jeff Landry, a Republican, Tuesday, and goes into effect August 1st. So without entertaining any validity through some form of rationale for any restriction, let's jump to the chase on this report here, this notice to us. An attempt to establish a specific range at which onlookers can record officers actively engaged in law enforcement duties has occurred elsewhere. The language in the measure appears to put in some safety nets, but stating that it's an acceptable defense to this crime includes establishing that the lawful order or command was neither received nor understood by the defendant. That would be an auditor or someone who's witnessing. They'll come and get you if you witness something wrong. You know, they'll start putting this on you, and then it's the burden's on you if you notice what they're doing here. Though I wouldn't rely on those as a defense. These are our defenses, which you should familiarize yourself with those elements for the best shot at relying on them if you're going to do this. But the defense, though, is not an avoidance that I talk about. Avoidance is not a defense. That's the shift between pre-plea, it's an avoidance, and post-plea, it gets into a defenses. And so you start understanding what I've been saying, research that, you'll start recognizing the language that I use. And I try to keep it pretty straightforward, but this is what we're looking at here. These are defenses. These are after you agree to that jurisdiction. There's going to be a set of other things before that. But moving this story here through, and again, talking about for the auditors here, and they're filming in this one state, caution, be careful and prepare. In 2022, lawmakers in Arizona passed a law that would have made it illegal to knowingly film police officers 8 feet or closer if the officer tells the person to stop. A coalition of media groups and American Civil Liberties Union successfully sued to block Arizona's law, with a federal judge ruling it is unconstitutional, citing infringement against a clearly established right to film police doing their jobs. In similar cases, half of the U.S. courts of appeal across the nation have ruled on the side of allowing people to record without restriction. So challenges on this are not novel. There are sample cases to follow, but only half of the circuits agree. So be cautious and research what's happened in any other circuit. Any of you will film the cops in this state of Louisiana may want to find the case to join that should be coming to challenge it. You should find that case to join it, or to go to an advocacy group if you're not quite ready on your own to offer to help litigate the challenge, or offer your best interest to that, because you have to have the intent or the prior actions that you can show to give you standing to either help be part of it or to help or be an initiator in your own challenge. Get someone maybe to help you go after this. It's not limited to the filmers, though. As I said, anyone interested in witnessing the actions of the police would necessarily be required to know this stuff. I mean, this is the way that they're going to do this. Now, be ready to take it up to the Supreme Court, though, given that since you now know other circuits are 50-50, if you will, if that's what go there, half, if you will, have voted one way, and this state may go the different way. Get ready to go to the Supreme Court with it, because that's the difference between the two different circuits. That is one of the elements getting you into the Supreme Court. Remember, the Arizona case said any distance was an infringement, which I find kind of fascinating too. So this is going to be what they're after, because apparently half of the states are still going to possibly come down. Republicans in Louisiana have decided they'd go against the half of the country to force a distance that's three times farther than Arizona was found not to be able to do. So this is what I'm saying, that there's no, you can't even get common sense out in the world. It doesn't matter what party you're in. But another type of infringement that has a remedy, if we look for it, the Amazon execs may be personally liable for tricking users into Prime signups. FTC has alleged that the Amazon, quote, tricked and coerced and manipulated customers into subscribing to Amazon Prime. A court order said failing to get informed consent by designing a murky sign-up process and to keep subscriptions high, Amazon also did not provide simple mechanisms for these subscribers to cancel their Prime memberships. The FTC alleged instead Amazon forced consumers intending to cancel to navigate a 4-page, 6-click, 15-option cancellation process. Let me interject there. If you didn't hear my voice re-speaking to you about that 7-page more than 20 question form 4473 form looked like it fit the same bill to me right there. Only the government's doing it. And so there you see some legal contract standards right there as well into this one. You can add into your challenges as you move forward. The judge apparently did not find Amazon's denials completely persuasive. Viewing the FTC's complaint in light of the most favorable to the FTC, Judge John Chun concluded that the allegations sufficiently indicate that Amazon had actual or constructive knowledge that its Prime sign-up and cancellation flows were misleading consumers. So there's another requirement of giving knowledge to an official or whatever. Some of you know about this. It's all right here, too, to read right through this little discussion. But I'm going to get to something that's even more important as we keep moving through. Who is also liable, even though a corporation's being sued? And this becomes another interesting avenue. In his order, Chun also denied individual motions to dismiss from Amazon executives Russell Grandinetti, Neil Lindsay, and Jamil Ghani, who oversaw Prime operations. The executive claimed that the FTC never alerted them to any wrongdoing before the filings of the lawsuit, so how could they have known they were violating the law? According to Chun, however, the FTC sufficiently alleged that each of these executives knew they were violating consumer protection laws when prioritizing profits over eliminating dark pattern-triggered accidental or non-consensual Prime signups. But why is it important to have a consensual and a fully disclosed Prime signup, but they didn't do that for you with the Covey swindle and working with the law? Why did they do that? No, they didn't do anything like that. So we see more incursions here. But we're now seeing that the executives were not given an out. And this is a third-party problem that I want you to pay attention to, not just for Amazon. I've been talking about the third-party, the use of the government in the fascist way of third parties to come at you. And so you have to, again, they're telling you you have to know the law. They're not giving the ignorance any air. There should be no excuse. And on top of that, they were given notice. So this is setting up what we are supposed to be doing if we want to start learning how better to approach our problems. So look over all the elements in this story and put those together to make an executive of a corporation liable. And when I look at this case, it reminded me of the efforts of Jerry Day. I haven't heard too much more about Jerry Day, and he does have a couple of videos on YouTube yet in the last months, but not many, where he's offering information on how to do the very same thing regarding the SMART meters and the utility company CEOs. This is essentially what we here at the network had to do with AT&T. We follow, didn't read this before. There's just a certain path that you follow. And when you learn that, it's not that big a work. Once you get the work of learning, now you got it in you pretty much. After sufficiently exhausting all aspects of its customer service and tech support and getting nowhere, concise email of all that, of the most important federal, state, and contract laws violations was summarized in our case. And again, this is just talking with the company. We exhaust every avenue, and we took a document. We documented that, and I think it was about 8 things derived from the record of interaction sent in short paragraphs and sent by email to the CEO with a notice that if the matter over which he had control was not cleared up immediately, he would be summoned into a small claims court. Now, you heard that control element described in the article as well. And so we established that in the communication. An assistant to the CEO responded to the email after a long discussion with this matter. The matter was resolved within 5 days. And I say it was many weeks getting up to that point, just making sure that the record was made nice and clear. But this article here shows that the CEO can be privately liable for things in his or her control. Now, we derived that from the record as well, that the CEO was in control of this whole thing that we had to suffer relative to a carrier. The carrier's misinformation, and essentially it was working out to be theft. But when faced with that, you give the notice, and it's proper. Again, short paragraphs, it wasn't a lot. It was just the parts of the law that we were going to rely on, that he was going to have to answer to resolve, applied correctly. Even before this case, we wrote that the CEO's assistant resolved that matter without going to court. So this is not a matter, oh, we're going to go to court. It's trying not to go to court. You make your case so good, just in discussion, and so clear and simple that they just decided you're just not worth a lot of trouble because you're going to be trouble. So notice in this Amazon case that the corporation executives denied culpability as the attorneys are off to advise, putting some things at issue before the court in the objection. And that was what the issue was, what they put up in supposed defense, that Chun would not go on it. Because the denial was also an evidence technique. They hoped you'd go away in this when they put that forward. And if you don't, the attorneys get paid to go to court anyway. So the attorneys are a win-win. They try to do that to dissuade you from moving forward. You have to be strong, not just belligerent in the fact of I'm right and you're wrong. You have your facts, you have your law, and you bring that particular thing and they deny, and then you say, listen, this is what we're going to do, and they will go to court. But if your case is strong, you can bring these CEOs, these third-party contractors, liable. And I keep talking about this because we're walking into a future, the future that they want, which there's going to be third-party actors involved between you and the government. Well, if there is a government, it might just be governance. But notwithstanding this condition, the denial, the judge found them culpable. And that's important here to see. Again, they can talk all they want, but there's certain requirements that they were supposed to do once they were given the knowledge, and it was relevant material and pertinent to what was going on. But I think the better record of things, not susceptible to argument, is a better way to go. And I believe we did in our little issue and matter. Once they received the short paragraphs, it was fairly quick to. Again, it wasn't just, oh, well, you won. They had quite a discussion there in order to try and dissuade the last bit of it. But ultimately, that wasn't going to work. So the better record helped, and it's not based on opinion, but the law, and applied to the objective facts that you create. And also be aware, like in our situation, there was no assertion by AT&T about having to go through dispute resolution either, which I heard lots of people have to put up with. We didn't. So that was put to rest by the facts evidencing an unconscionable behavior. And so that assertion, backed by the facts, negated their ability to bring the dispute resolution. The dispute resolution wasn't even brought up in our matter, and I think it attests to the correctness of the claims that were made. And this shouldn't have to be, but it is. And this is a problem, but it explains that we're not helpless. This case here, that I'm reading from, the story says that these CEOs, these third parties CEOs, can be held to account. In this case, those corporate execs were personally liable. But it's for the right thing. And you have a great measure of capacity to make it so in you when you focus on it and then get you behind the woodshed with that executive mystery. And I think that's going to be important coming in forward. As they start to obscure who's going to have liability here, under cover of government, is it sovereignty, or this and that, start learning what this news is telling us about what these cases and judges will or won't do. Notwithstanding those guardrails, we have to live within those at this point until we can oust the whole thing. And so now these CEOs may understand better what real unrealized losses are yet, as we now see and get into the economy a bit. $517 billion in unrealized losses hits the U.S. banking system. FDIC says 63 lenders on the brink of insolvency. So remember, as this whole thing goes, so do the corporations. Who's going to keep things running? Unrealized losses in the U.S. banking system are once again on the rise, according to new numbers from the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, FDIC. Unrealized losses represent the difference between the price banks paid for securities and the current market value of those assets. Although banks can hold securities until they mature without marking them to market on their balance sheets, unrealized losses can become an extreme liability when banks need liquidity. The FDIC also says the number of lenders on the problem bank list rose last quarter. According to the agency, these banks are on the brink of insolvency due to the financial operations or managerial weakness or a combination of such issues. While the FDIC says that the health of the United States banking system is in no imminent risk, it warns that the persistent inflation, volatile market rates, and geopolitical concerns continue to put pressure on the industry. Quote, the issues could cause credit quality earnings and liquidity challenges for the industry. In addition, deterioration in the certain loan portfolios, particularly office properties, and credit card loans continues to warrant monitoring. These issues, together with funding and margin pressures, will remain matters of ongoing supervisory attention by the FDIC. And don't underestimate the value of those sentences, those parts of that sentence, the office properties problem and the credit card loan problem. All teetering on the brink of an interest rate hike when the Jerome Magic 8-Ball Powell's Magic 8-Ball says yes to an interest rate hike question. The office properties question is a good indicator how bad the economy is really doing here. Pay attention here for those of us that are doing this and watching unrealized losses coming to as a tsunami to crash on our shores and take us out if we're opposed a little too close to the coast. Now, the government blank check that you pay for by your activities until you stop can be found in speed cameras in Atlanta, improperly issued $300,000 and $500,000 worth of tickets. This is where the future is heading when we leave the police work up to Big Brother and AI. Innocent drivers in Atlanta were improperly issued $75 for speeding tickets through the school zone at times when the flashing yellow lights used to indicate a revised speed limit during school hours were not flashing. Reporters inquire why cameras weren't deactivated after hours but received no direct response. Ivan DeCaseta was fined $75 for speeding 39 miles an hour in a 25 mile an hour zone in the nearly 5 p.m. on Friday, despite inactive flashing lights, the report says. It really just seems like a way to try to bring in money rather than actually increase safety, he concluded. And I say ding, 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 ding. Exactly. You are the product. As a result, drivers who received these citations numbering over 4,500 since November 2023 will be refunded. The issue led to the issuance of hundreds of thousands of dollars in incorrect fines over a period of 6 months. All those people violated for no good reason, with no warrant to do so. All extortion. And all those people should be suing the municipality for those violations. And a municipality is not a sovereignty. But we may be quiet because for $75 we got our money back. It's okay. We don't look at the bigger bills coming. We don't look how they're doing stealing it from us from Jerome Powell. The report's saying that FDIC, that's your money in the bank. You say it, you think it is. It's not your money. But look at the money. It's not money. These are debts. These are notes. Notes are debts, not money. And speaking of more unrealized losses through governmental parasitic feeding controls, now, I'm not a fan of fast food restaurants, but some people really need to rely on them, I guess. And then we hear this conditioning going on. Thousands of Californians lose jobs thanks to Newsom's $20 an hour minimum wage. Take note of all this. Understand what happens when the government starts to control things. But we're not really working in a free market, notwithstanding some of the problems of free markets and labor and the advantage that can be taken by employers. Why these rules start coming? Remember, it's the master slave relationship when you go to work for someone as a job. Fast food restaurants have recently had to lay off nearly 10,000 workers, according to the major trade group. California fast food restaurants have had to slash some 10,000 jobs in recent months due to the state's new minimum wage hike, according to the recent report by the California Business and Industrial Alliance trade group. The report comes after California's Democratic Governor Gavin Newsom signed a bill dubbed AB 1228 in September of last year, raising the state's minimum wage from $16 an hour to $20 an hour. The law came into effect in April, and many companies have since been forced to close down, raise prices, or lay off employees. CABIA President Tom Monzo told Fox News that the California businesses have already been under total attack and total assault for years, and claimed that the state's lawmakers were living in a fantasy land if they thought that drastically raising wages would help workers and businesses. What if the Uniparty is trying to put in democracy, folks? What if it's the plan? This is what I'm suggesting to you. Watch what's going on. It's a plan. You don't do this if you're sane, if you're not a psychopath, if you're not a sociopath, if you don't have a foreign insurrection or foreign usurpation agenda. Quote, you can only raise prices so much, Monzo said, insisting that, quote, people are not going to pay $20 for a Big Mac. It's not going to happen. And people, we had the report here just two or so weeks ago where there people are finding that so-called fast food a luxury. watch out. Again, the middle class is being gutted at this point. And, that's a serious condition, and they're taking, when I read and made emphasis on the law closing down, that is the engine of your commerce, your economy. As consumers now consider fast food to be a luxury purchase due to how expensive it has become, he also stated that the jobs in the fast food industry were never meant to be long-term or having pay calling in a starter industry in which people start out working as kids to gain a good work ethic for the rest of their careers. And I thought that was an interesting comment about being a starter industry. I remember that. It sure has changed. It began as a starter industry, which over the years grew to becoming the last industry many would or could work. Soon it looks like to be no more. And so has gone this economy. Watch how that's why that happened, the dynamic over a few decades. Last week, CABIA ran a full-page ad in the California edition of USA Today featuring mock obituaries of restaurants that had been harmed by the new minimum wage law. These include popular chains such as Pizza Hut, Subway, Burger King, McDonald's, and Cinnabon. According to the trade group, one taco chain, Rubio's, has had to close as many as 48 outlets in the state due to its rising cost of doing business, including 24 stores in Los Angeles area and 13 in San Diego and 11 in Northern California. Now, what remaining restaurants there are will get its customers to work for them and pay more for the benefit, as we continue to read the same notice to us. The owner of 140 Burger King franchises in the state has announced he will slash workers' hours and expedite the rollout of self-service kiosks to offset the impact of the new minimum wage law. Similarly, measures will be taken by McDonald's franchisees, who said it will hike minimum menu prices and delay renovations at 18 restaurants. So it's not a free market, and so you're given the market you gave by this guy named Noisom Newsom. And it's all this is all underlying and controlled by sustainable psychopaths to eliminate everyone that can't comply with the smiling government oppressor. Whatever I might think of fast food, the fast food industry interfering with entrepreneurship is not going to bring the economy back, and a lot more mom and pops will be going down. That is well known to be the engine of driving the economy that the California legislature approved by an up-and-coming presidential candidate just dropped some sugar in the gas tank for that whole state and its industries. And the fast food industry isn't the only job sector that will either have to cut jobs or close altogether. 10,000 people there is a drop in this bucket if we start looking, consider. So how do people get along and pay their bills or keep their homes? Is UBI, Universal Basic Income, around the corner for everyone, even the company owners who now have no property and are going to have to like it? From basic economy to universal basic income is the future that they want. And is this Second Amendment of any worth against that attack? As I keep bringing up, everyone wants to go, oh, we're going to fight them in the Second Amendment. No, these guys are got it. They got us in a chokehold and we haven't figured out. We can't reach our gun, and if we did, it doesn't work. It doesn't work for this. Where do we go with it? How do we, the people, fight this oppression coming from those purportedly saying they're serving you for your benefit? The answer to this oppression better come real quickly. But again, not the Second Amendment is going to handle this one. We consider, as I always think about this problem, maybe consider as we're moving forward, private contracts for livelihood. Remove yourself from the master-slave relationship the government is protecting to the death of most everyone. That's what these wage laws are about. That's what these labor laws are about. They're protecting the parties in the master-slave relationship. Remove yourself from that relationship. Go to contracts of private livelihood. They're even after those, so look very carefully. But likely, you'd probably go look in the tax law, for starters, about that. Being a private contractor. Not that you are subject, but how the authoritas looks at it, if you're scrutinized. Find out what the difference between the contractor and an employee is, such as providing your own tools or writing and write a contract for that. There's a ways to get around that too. If you don't have the money for the tools, you can lease them back. There's all kinds of interesting little tricks This is what the big boys do. You might want to consider doing that anyway, just generally becoming, in a way, your own business, your own life. You know, you're just making your own life. The word is livelihood is what you're looking to do for the most part. It might be better than not working at all anyway. The company owner losing that business. And there we see maybe a little mutual support condition that I've been talking about. You work with the employers. I talked about this at the Comey swindle. Don't go in there and chide it, and don't try to make a big deal. Say, listen, we got a serious problem in this country. Let's be fair to each other. Let's move ourselves into a different relationship between us. We will continue. I'll work as well as I can for what you can pay. We'll just continue to work. We look at what we need in the moment, and we will adjust this as we go. That's what I guess normal people should do, right? This is BTWRLM 581. But moving from mutual support that way to the vacuum of customer support, the PR disaster, Microsoft has lost trust with its users, and Windows recall is the straw that broke the camel's back. And listen to all these, again, these important concepts. Trust. I'm talking about the government's the same way. The government, if you look at it just like it's a big corporation, they have the same problems. When a government wants to go do something, like go to war, it has to keep the confidence and trust of the people. That's like rule number two of an occupying force as well, on top of that in international law. And it's what a good ruler does to look and make sure that the people are behind him and how to get him there, like Putin has done. The world is up in arms over Windows recall, but why? It stems from Microsoft's seeming lack of care for Windows and its users. It's a nightmare. Let me just interject that. Why would that be, unless the future they want has nothing to do with that? You're the product, and they just want you to get using it. Their object is something else. It's a nightmare scenario that for Microsoft, the headlining feature of its new Copilot Plus PC initiative, which is supposed to be to drive millions of PC sales over the next couple of years, is under significant fire for being what many say is a major breach of privacy and security on Windows. The feature is in question is a window recall, a new AI tool designed to remember everything you do on Windows. Trust and confidence, folks. Trust and confidence. Microsoft apparently doesn't have it. For a tool like this to be feasible, trust between the user and the platform is required, a luxury Microsoft doesn't appear to have with its Windows user base right now. Recall operates by taking and storing captures of your screen every few seconds to build a database that the user can later search, which screenshots are used as visual aids. Microsoft is fully aware that the concept of Windows recall sounds creepy. I know that the company spent a lot of time internally figuring out how to communicate this feature to the world, but it turns out there's no good way to communicate something like this when your users don't trust you. Users are describing the feature as a literally spyware or malware, and droves of people are proclaiming they will proudly switch to Linux or Mac, of all things, in the wake of it. Microsoft simply doesn't enjoy the same benefit of the doubt that other tech giants like Apple have. There's your Mac and Apple, and look at what that company's doing. Like, they're going underneath the radar. Maybe not so much. Apple must be doing a much better job on mind-controlling their customers or potential customers, so beware about that. Had Apple, this article goes on, had Apple announced a feature like recall, there would have been much less backlash, as Apple has done a great job building loyalty and trust with its users, prioritizing polished software experiences, feelings, folks, and positioning privacy as a high-level concern for the company, and I'll add in word only, not in practice, as we're finding out. But look at the dynamic in this story, very interesting. And even we get the people that are involved in the future that they want and bring it on. Elon Musk has already said if Apple does that, Apple products will, adding their AI into their products, Apple will be forbidden to enter his companies for the safety and security vulnerabilities it creates. But don't forget, Elon Musk helped start this mess with OpenAI that he's not involved now in, though. So now enter, as you think about this vulnerabilities, an attacker, hacker AI to hoover all your data up. This hacker tool extracts all the data collected by Windows' new Recall AI. So before they're even bringing it out, there's already a program to come and steal all the stuff it's going to make that they say is sequestered away and no one knows about it but you. It's a lot. Windows Recall takes a screenshot every 5 seconds. Cybersecurity researchers say the system is simply simple to abuse, and one ethical hacker has already built a tool to show how easy it really is. 2 weeks ahead of Recall's launch on new Copilot Plus PCs on June 18th, security researchers have demonstrated how preview versions of the tools store the screenshots in an unencrypted database. The researchers say the data could easily be hoovered up by an attacker. And now in a warning about how Recall could be abused by criminal hackers, Alex Maganin, a cybersecurity strategist and ethical hacker, has released a demo tool that can automatically extract and display everything Recall records on a laptop. Since Microsoft revealed the Recall in mid-May, security researchers have repeatedly compared it to spyware or stalkerware that can track everything you do on your device. Quote, it's a Trojan 2.0, really, built in, Haganoff says. While Microsoft's new Copilot Plus PCs aren't out yet, it's possible to use Recall by emulating a version of the devices. Quote, it does everything automatically, he says, including in what the database captures or screenshots of whatever is on your desktop, a potential goldmine for criminal hackers or domestic abusers who may physically access their victim's device. Haganoff says that an attacker could get a huge amount of information about their target, including insights into their emails, personal conversations, and any sensitive information that's captured by Recall. And if you look deep enough, there's not much that's not captured. So consider this seriously. You consider the digital gulag that we're moving into, as I've been reading. I hope you have been, the way I read this stuff. The criticisms come as hacks of Microsoft systems have led to various U.S. government data breaches. Haganoff says that the cases of employers which bring your own device policies, there is a risk of someone leaving with huge volumes of company data saved on their laptops. And now consider they're doing it, hardwiring this massive vulnerability into the processors directly. In fact, it appears this will be their actual function. The more perfectus union of the post-founding father era war of terror Siberian panopticonocracy of the dystopian token citizen. This is why Windows doesn't necessarily care about its users. They're going to be people they're going to be deriving income from whether they want it or not. They become the property. They're controlled as well. But don't worry about all those half a trillion in unrealized losses to increase here that we just heard about in that hit the banks. All these vulnerabilities are used to bring on that digital fascism regulation oversight by the government, as we read Yellen to warn of significant risks from use of AI in finance. When that becomes your whole life and you go through your machines and it has a built-in AI hardwired or software, what do you think is going to happen? Here's that they're telling us, the government's telling us what they're walking you into if you accept. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen, she's yelling from the rooftops, I guess, will warn that the use of artificial intelligence in finance could lower transaction costs, but carries significant risks, according to excerpts from a speech to be delivered on Thursday. In the remarks to the Financial Stability Oversight Council and Brookings Institution AI Conference, Yellen says AI-related risks have moved towards the top of the regulatory council's agenda. How long has AI been around? And it's already moving to the top of the agenda. Quote, specific vulnerabilities may arise from complexity and opacity of AI models. Do you know what's in your wallet, folks? Do you know when the AI in that computer is? Do you know what's AI on the chip? Do you have a transparency to that, actually? Because it's opaque to you, isn't it? Opacity of AI models, inadequate risk management frameworks to account for AI risks, and interconnections that emerge as many market participants rely on the same data and models, Yellen said in excerpts. Quote, advances in natural language processing, image recognition, Recall, and generative AI, for example, create new opportunities to make financial services less costly and easier to access, she says in the excerpts. But what does it do? Gap capture all this. What about the Fifth Amendment, the right not to incriminate oneself? Microsoft is crushing with their image-making Total Recall. But despite that, or more likely because of the technocrats' digital utopian hubris, it's gone, folks. Hackers steal $305 million in DMM Bitcoin crypto exchange. Crypto exchange DMM Bitcoin confirmed on Friday that it had been the victim of a hack resulting in a theft of 4,502.9 Bitcoin, or about $305 million. According to crypto security firm Elliptic, this is the eighth largest crypto theft in history. This is the token citizen right here. DMM Bitcoin said it detected an unauthorized leak of Bitcoin BTC from our wallet on Friday, and that it was still investigating and had taken measures to stop the further threat. So what's in your wallet, folks? No, now. What's in your wallet? Are you sure? How about now? Is it still there in your wallet? How about now? You know, that stealthy uncertainty doesn't happen with gold and silver, though, does it? Not those tangible coins. And it can be defended in the open by the Second Amendment, can't it? See how quickly we the people can begin to restore the Constitutional Republic for each one of us? We just start using the things of tangibility. Stop this nonsense. What's in your wallet? No, now. Keep looking. When is AI going to come in? When's it going to steal it all? We can't possibly know. But the vulnerabilities in the digital gulag don't end with your cash, or you think is your money, or what you think and you trust is money. The crooks threaten to leak 3 billion personal records stolen from background check firm. It turns out opting out actually works in this matter. This is what I've been suggesting all this time about all of this stuff. The criminal gang that goes by the handle of USDOD put the database up for sale at $3.5 million on an underworld forum in April, and rather incredibly claimed the trove included 2.9 billion records on all U.S., Canadian, and British citizens. The pilfered information is said to include individual full name, address history going back to at least three decades, social security numbers, people's parents, siblings, and relatives, some of whom had been dead for nearly 20 years. This is the same silver lining, according to the VX team. The database does not contain information from individuals who use databases that opted out. Every person who used some sort of data opt-out service was not present. So we guess this is a good lesson for opting out. When we talk about TSA, how about if you're not even there? It's not even applicable. Don't allow it to be applicable. How about just opting your trust out of the entire globalizing digital realm? Problem solved. But don't dare tell about how you might see anything wrong. Security vulnerabilities, they're affecting your wallet. You call that out, and they're not going to like it. A law student unfairly disciplined after reporting data breach blunder. A former student at the Inns of Court College of Advocacy says he has hauled over the coals by the college for having acted responsibly with integrity in reporting a security blunder that left sensitive information about students exposed. The breach saw personal data such as email addresses, phone numbers, and academic information, including exam marks and previous institutions attended, accessible to students at the college. Students using the ICCA's web portal were able to access ID photos, as well as student ID numbers and sensitive data, such as health records, visa status, information as to whether they were pregnant or had children. It's just somebody being able to peer into those databases. When AI gets involved and starts making stuff up? Quote, I really did lose motivation to get into the legal world. Maybe that was a good thing, folks. But he continues, so you can read the story. Because I realized how much they get away with and how destructive that behavior could be to the individuals. Him speaking about the system itself, this Inns of Court school, the administration, the government. Quote, these proceedings were upheld. All my career could have been in tatters. Think about your social credit here, folks. Put this together. You're telling us what's up in the future. it would have been really difficult for me to do anything about it because however irrational the outcome of the misconduct panel could be, you can't really overturn it. It's there as a misconduct finding against you, and it stays with you for life. Okay, right? There we are. The former student added, in the legal system, bureaucratic defamation stays with you the rest of your life, is being blockchained as all the other Siberian panopticonocratic trustees from cradle to grave. Sound familiar? Yeah. This didn't just happen yesterday. This has been a long-term plan. Democracy. Certainly, to ask for the offered reward for uncovering any vulnerabilities, putting people that you trust you at risk, well, they are duped anyway, right? But even asking for a reward where you're finding these vulnerabilities is all of a sudden now foreboding. Apple refused to pay a $1 million bounty to Kaspersky Lab in iOS 0 days. Apple has refused to pay Kaspersky Lab a reward for discovering critical vulnerabilities in iOS that allowed attackers to install spyware on any iPhone. According to RTVI, the vulnerabilities were reported to Apple in 2023, and under the Apple Security Bounty Program, such discoveries can earn up to $1 million. However, Apple declined to transfer the reward of Kaspersky's lab or a charity. In early June 2023, the FSB, Russia now, announced the discovery of an intelligence campaign by American intelligence services using Apple mobile devices. What do we say about the government and Apple and being used? The agency reported several thousand iPhones, including those of embassy and diplomatic mission employees, were infected in Russia and abroad. On the same day, Kaspersky Lab published a detailed report on the most sophisticated cyber attack on iOS dubbed Operation Triangulation. Quote, the attack involved sending an iMessage with a special attachment containing an exploit. The exploit triggered the execution of malicious code without any user interaction, allowing attackers to introduce spyware into the iPhone silently. Kaspersky Lab found spyware modules on iPhones of its employees, including top management and middle managers. Quote, the purpose of that attack was espionage, a collection of any information from devices, geolocation, cameras, microphones, files, contacts, in general, all the data that could be represented on the device. Now get back to the Microsoft recall. Yeah, makes sense now, doesn't it? This was not a financially motivated cyber attack. Attackers do not use many resources to steal users' banking data, for example. How simple it is for getting at you. What's in your wallet, folks? Are you sure? How about now? We are confident that this is a high-level targeted cyber espionage activity, Golov explained. In the description of the release patches, Apple named four Kaspersky Lab employees who discovered the vulnerabilities. Kaspersky Lab will shift now to Android. Following the detection of the cyber attack, Kaspersky Lab transitioned all employees to mobile devices with Android OS, but let's not put too much faith and trust in all this. This is what they're doing. Where do we go, folks? This is consistent with Elon Musk as well on the question of the security in light of the inbred AI on Apple that they're talking about bringing in. They've already got vulnerabilities. And then Kaspersky points it out that they don't get no reward. Despite Kaspersky Lab's significant contribution to identifying the reported critical iOS vulnerabilities, Apple's refusal to pay the bounty or donate it to charity has raised questions about the internal policies and decision-making processes. Well, you think maybe the government back in its back pocket has a problem with that? Trust and confidence is a powerful thing here, folks. We rely on, he says, Apple wouldn't have this problem that Microsoft does. Why Apple and U.S. government try to keep both in you, including your consent, through the acceptance of their corrupt existences. But we, the people, are to keep that republic, not the trust and confidence in a corrupt government or its kept corporations. We should be eschewing democracy and keeping the republic. From questions about digital security to questions about food security, we move. Deny, denounce, delay. It's all like an attorney, doesn't it? The battle over the risk of ultra-processed foods. Big Food is trying to dampen fears about the effects of industrial formulated substances when the Brazilian nutritional scientist Carlos Monteiro coined the term ultra-processed foods 15 years ago, he established what he calls a new paradigm for assessing the impact of diet on health. Monteiro had noticed that although the Brazilian households were spending less on sugar and oil, obesity rates were going up. The paradox could be explained by increased consumption of food that had undergone high levels of processing, such as the addition of preservatives or flavorings or removal or addition of nutrients. There's your imbalancing going on. But health authorities and food companies resisted the link, Monteiro tells the FT. These are people who spent their whole lives thinking that the only link between diet and health is nutrient content of foods. Food is more than nutrients. Monteiro's food classification system, named NOVA, assessed not only the nutritional content of foods, but also the processing that undergone before reaching our plates. The system laid the groundwork for 2 decades of scientific research linking the consumption of UPFs to obesity, cancer, and diabetes. And remember, we read that story that those so-called medications that's supposed to reduce your appetite so you lose weight, they found obesity-related cancers reduced as well. There's a connection here on this story as well in this place. Studies of UPFs show that these processes create food from snack bars to breakfast cereals to ready meals that encourages overeating but may leave the eater undernourished. A recipe might, for example, contain a level of carbohydrate and fat that triggers the brain's reward system, meaning you have to consume more to sustain the pleasure of eating. Now we get into a whole different dynamic about food relative to what's in the food, too. In 2019, American metabolic scientist Kevin Hall carried out a randomized study comparing people who ate an unprocessed diet with those who followed a UPF diet over 2 weeks. Hall found that the subjects who ate the ultra-processed diet consumed around 500 more calories per day, more fat and carbohydrates, less protein, and gained weight. Rising concern about the health impact of UPFs has recast the debate around food and public health, giving rise to, they protected us as in COVID swindle, those public health officials, didn't they? Giving rise to the books, policy and campaigns, and academic papers. It also presents the most concrete challenge yet to the business model of food industry, of for whom UPFs are extremely profitable. The industry has responded with ferocious campaign against regulation. In part, it has used the same lobbying playbook as it is to fight against the labeling and taxation of junk food, high in calories, big spending to influence policymakers. There's your lobbying industry that makes your vote really nothing at some point, likely getting model business act from the American Association we talked about earlier, just a bunch of bar members. The strategy I see the food industry using is to deny, denounce, and delay, says Barry Smith, director of the Institute of Philosophy of the University of London and a consultant for companies on the multisensory experience of food and drink. As a result, as researchers have learned more about the link between UPFs and the poor health outcomes, companies have remained largely silent about these risks, leaving trade bodies that advocate on their behalf to argue loudly against the validity of the research. So this is a much larger or a longer article, and so I'm going to stop here. Really something to read, though, but I think it behooves everyone to read the rest of the article to get a sense of what is at stake regarding your feed supply. Notice the distrust gaining traction in the article, too, the reasons why and what industry is doing to gain your confidence, but more importantly, the political lobbying against regulation unless it gives multinationals, these corporations, an advantage. But remember, as a society is pressured dynamically into austerity, economically or by supply chain monopolization towards ESG or sustainable corporations through legislation under the euphemisms such as food security or ensuring you will eat the bugs, or justifying attacking your farmer, rancher, or other local food producer, your choices will be dwindling. it benefits the fascist system to fatten up the herd. And while the corporations get fat off the profits you will willingly give them, it seems, they starve you of everything you need, even of information, like some Munchausen mother. Google's AI really is that stupid, feeds people answers from The Onion. Google new AI overview has encouraged people to eat rocks, glue their pizza, and other incredibly stupid results. As denizens of the Internet, we have all often seen a news item so ridiculous it causes us to think, quote, this seems like an Onion article. But as a real human being, those of you that are animals like that, most of us have the ability to discern between reality and satire. Asked, quote, how many rocks should I eat each day, close quote, Google's newly launched AI overview said that geologists recommend eating, quote, at least one small rock a day, close quote. That language was, of course, pulled almost word for word from a 2021 Onion headline. Another research, what color highlighters do the CIA use, prompted an overview to answer black, which was an Onion joke from 2005. Unfortunately, AI overview lacks the ability to discern between reality and satire. The feature, which launched less than 2 weeks ago with no way for users to opt out, provides answers to certain, just don't opt in, folks, that's how you do that. But anyway, provides answers to certain queries at the top of the page about and other online resources. The artificial intelligence creates its answers from knowledge it has synthesized from around the world, which would be great, except for everything on the Internet is not true or accurate. So, except for AI figuring out how to, and then hoovering up what's in your wallet, it's gone, folks. Welcome to your future relative to these digital machines, relative to the people that manufacture them, and the deceit that happens behind the scenes, the lack of follow-through, lack of encouragement to actually tighten things up just a little bit. But what if you can't seize them? You know them when you seize them. What if you can't seize them? What if things are done in secret and not disclosed to you until it's too late? Maybe not now after you hear this story. Samsung requires independent repair shops to share customer data, snitch on people who use aftermarket parts, and leaked contract shows. In exchange for selling them parts, Samsung requires independent repair shops to give Samsung's name, contact information, phone identifier, and customer's complaint details of everyone who gets their phone repaired at these shops, according to a contract obtained by 404 Media. Stunningly, it also requires these nominally independent shops to immediately disassemble any phones that customers have brought them that have been previously repaired with aftermarket or third-party parts, and to immediately notify Samsung that the customer has used third-party parts. Quote, companies shall immediately disassemble all products that are created or assembled out of, compromised of, or that contain any service parts not purchased from Samsung, a section of the agreement reads, and shall immediately notify Samsung in writing of the details and circumstances of any unauthorized use or misappropriation of any service parts for any purpose other than pursuant to this agreement. Samsung may terminate this agreement if these terms are violated. Aaron Perzanowski, a personally property law expert, a professor at the University of Michigan Law School, told me, quote, most customers would be very surprised to learn that their personal information and details are about their devices are being shared with the manufacturer, and I doubt there is any meaningful disclosure or consent for sharing data. So this looks like a substantial and unexpected invasion of consumer privacy. Let me quickly recall you back. That was the question in the Amazon case, remember, and the executives. You know what to do here. Contract shows, well, besides maybe to stop buying Samsung. Where are we going to go eventually, though? The contract shows the incredible, maybe de-Google is a good idea for them. Maybe we should move that right away. The contract shows the incredible level of control that Samsung has over independent repair shops, the independent is in quotes, but which need to sign the agreement to get repair parts from Samsung. Signing this contract does not even make a repair shop an authorized repair center. This is a distinction that requires shop owners to jump through even more hoops. This is exactly the kind of onerous, one-sided agreement that necessitates the right to repair. The Kit Walsh, staff attorney for Electronic Freedom Foundation and right to repair expert, told me the data collection is excessive. I may not have chosen to disclose my address to identify or identify to Samsung, yet an added cost of repair, even an independent shop, is going to giving that information up. In addition to the provisions you mentioned about dismantling devices with third-party components, these create additional disincentives to getting devices repaired, which can both harm the device security and environment as the repaired devices wind up in landfills. That's the least of it here, folks. They're actually controlling the property. He's a property guy. You don't have a property, this is the future. And they're already acting like that's not your property. And you're going to like it. Eventually, you don't like it now. Eventually, you're going to like it. Under the right, well, unless you understand, you got to get behind the woodshed. Under the right to repair legislation passed in New York, Minnesota, and California, which go into effect this year, manufacturers like Samsung wouldn't be allowed to require consumers or repair shops to sign contracts like this in order to get repair parts. In 2020, Motherboard obtained a contract that Apple required independent repair companies to sign in order to get repair parts from that company. This absurd contract is exactly why we need the right to pass right to repair laws. Anti-right to repair lobbyists will often say legislation gets in the way of the industry's voluntary actions, but when you get to look under the hood at those voluntary programs, it's not a pretty picture. Nathan Proctor, Senior Director of Consumer Rights Group USPIRG's campaign for right to repair, told me, quote, "No one walks into a repair shop thinking that the technician signed a deal to tattle on you if you have an aftermarket parts in your phone. It seems that we need to keep reminding manufacturers that when you sell something, you don't own it anymore. Perhaps legislators can help to get the point across by passing laws to protect shop owners so that they don't have to sign bad deals like this one." I'm going to tell you it's a little bit worse than that. They're taking, these carriers are taking possession of phones they never owned. It was part of what our deal was here to try and get resolved, which happened in 5 days once we got the letter written, as I was talking to you way early in the broadcast. So if this right to repair need is the protections, is your cup of tea, they need help right now in the realm of property security, about your property. Get on the front end of the protecting property, and they're not going to like it. You know here what to do. If your state does not have a right to repair law enacted, take this kind of extortion away from those corporations. Maybe don't buy their product on top of that, but let them know as well. Back them off is another way to go at this if it's not legislation. Just find us something here and jump in. Again, target-rich environment. As I told you years and years ago, you're going to have to start making laws that even allow you to do the most basic things. It shocks me to even think about that, but that's what's going on. We had food security, and then we have, what about health security? Surely we can trust the public health officials. No. I think we already figured that out in Comey swindle. Britain covered up tainted blood scandal that killed thousands. And this does have this connection. If the great Comey swindle didn't prove it to you, or maybe you just didn't know the government has been killing people for near ever. Well, in fact, one of the purposes of the government, it seems to be to kill people. Because, don't worry, they'll make more people. We hear this is through the Comey swindle Fauci thing. Back through the AIDS. Right? It's here. Still in the news. For a long time. Like I said, it's not just Fauci. The British government did not put patient safety first, while covering up a multi-decade tainted blood scandal leading to thousands of related deaths, and a report published Monday found. Britain's National Health Service allowed blood tainted with HIV and hepatitis to be used on patients without their knowledge. See a theme of disclosure here, folks. You got to insist on it, because they're not going to give it to you. If they don't want to give it to you, don't do it. How are they going to disclose to you the inner workings of their Siberian gulag machines as well. Don't engage it. Anyway, they're without their knowledge, leading to 3,000 deaths and more than 30,000 infections according to the 2,527-page final report of Justice Brian Justice Langstaff, a former judge of the High Court of England and Wales. In other words, we heard at the time there, this was expanding. They were actually giving the disease, if you will, giving the symptoms, as I explained to you was happening in Covey Swindle. Remember that guy Fauci, you know, that the HIV fraud that he was pushing? Remember that guy? How long do you think that government has been funding development of bioweapons? Remember, the propaganda, the government and the media was pushing in the middle 80s about HIV and how it could spread around in the warnings about those activities. Remember how they did that? It was the same thing if you heard about it. Langstaff oversaw a 5-year investigation into the use of tainted blood and blood products in Britain's healthcare system between 1970 and 1991. The report blames multiple administrations over the time period for knowingly exposing victims to unacceptable risks. What was I saying about just enforcing, for each one of you, local communicable disease law, put them into knowledge that they're not following the law. Then you don't have to move any further. Here, it was unknowing that the knowledge was even available. The clueless always get harmed. Patients were exposed through a variety of methods, including blood transfusions or being given blood plasma or other blood products to treat conditions like hemophilia. The great Covey Swindle, it was a jab at warp speed. I told you the doctors, the so-called nurses, they were the ones, these agents of contagion, that were giving away this poison, this bioweapon. In several cases, health officials lied about the risk to patients. CDC, WHO. In others, patients were infected during research. The whole thing of the great Covey Swindle, the research, the testing up to the research. In others, patients were infected during the research without their knowledge or consent, including children whose parents' consent was not sought. The tainted blood and blood products came from within the Britain, but were also imported from the United States, often in the form of treatments from people with hemophilia. Langstaff's report found serious failures when it came to screening donors, including collecting blood from prisons, which are considered high risk. The NHS also gave patients false reassurances on the attempt to save face, failing victims not once, but repeatedly. So this thing that's going on with Fauci is a pattern and custom. Maybe we are getting the elements for a RICO action. In 1997, the Commission of Inquiry on the Blood System in Canada published in its Creever report, which found the federal government and health officials were aware of the risks of HIV and hepatitis transmission. Around 8,000 people died. 30,000 people were infected with hepatitis and 2,000 with HIV during the 1970s and 80s in Kanukistan. Can you imagine a similar report 50 years into the future that will be made regarding the great Covey Swindle? And will it sound any different? As we read, Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals acknowledges plaintiff's claim that COVID-19 mRNA jab is not a vaccine, but a therapeutic. In a contentious case involving the Health Freedom Defense Fund and other plaintiffs versus the Los Angeles Unified School District, the court acknowledged the plaintiff's claim that the COVID-19 mRNA vaccines do not meet the traditional definition of vaccines because they do not prevent the spread of a virus, but only mitigate symptoms. Those of you listening behind me all these years, you've heard me say exactly there. Where did I get that? The law. You don't hear the law being mentioned here at all, do you? In this decision, the Ninth Circuit Court highlighted that the district court had misapplied the precedent set by Jacobs versus Massachusetts, and I'm going to remind you that was in 1905. It's not in the article. I talked about it as well, which upheld mandatory smallpox vaccination due to their effectiveness in preventing disease spread. The court noted that the plaintiff's claims taken as true at that stage, and this is at this stage, suggested that the COVID vaccines do not effectively prevent the spread of the COVID-19, thereby warranting further consideration of their allegations. Why didn't we hear the court source and cite where they get that prevention of spread? Why didn't they go to their local law? Is part of what we're not told, and if you don't know that, you don't have a real source, and they'll be able to persuade you away from your better senses when they really start to put the E-types to people and get them worked up a little different. It won't come at us the same anyway. But Judge R. Nelson, writing for the court, pointed out that the Jacobson ruling was based on the public health rationale of preventing disease spread, and the criterion of the plaintiff's alleged COVID-19 vaccines do not meet. Judge Collins, in a concurring opinion, emphasized the compulsory medical treatments for individual health benefits infringe on the fundamental rights to refuse such treatment, aligning with the constitutional principles protecting personal liberty. What was I telling you about? If you look at that word, unwarranted restraint of your liberty is the habeas corpus. Where'd she get that? She won't tell you. It was right there in the local communicable disease law, in every state in the circuit of the Ninth Circuit covers. You don't see them telling you where to find the source of your protection. This is a good case, but it's not that good. It's not going to give us the law. It's not going to do justice. The appeals court decision sends the case back to the district court, requiring further proceedings to adhere to the higher scrutiny applicable to the plaintiff's claim. So, not much here you haven't heard for years behind the woodshed, but this therapeutic claim doesn't get to the local communicable disease law. But that is where the government fostered and encouraged the injustice to everyone. And so, while it is an acknowledgement and a failure, these jabs were not what they were jabs. They weren't vaccines. They're not giving people the knowledge that you should get, you need to get for yourself, because they're not going to give it to you. I've known that. And that's why I do what I do, and notwithstanding all my hardships, I try to come every week to give what I can, to at least give you pointed around to look at some new stuff. You don't necessarily have to believe anything I say, but at least have the analysis done and the ability to do the analysis. Over the years, I think I've pretty well proven that there's not much that you can go wrong with if you, again, get back behind the woodshed. That requires you be the adult, right? You have to be responsible. So I have a link to the decision to read through, so maybe you can get into it and tease some things out. Again, look at what's not stated if you know. If you have some knowledge, watch how they don't state certain things, because that's important to be able to analyze. My response to this on the X Twitter post about the decision referencing the article was that, of course, they're not vaccines. Number one, they do not effectively prevent the spread, as I said, of the virus, part two. The first part, they do not effectively prevent the spread, is correct. Second part of the virus is incorrect, because as a matter of local communicable disease law, there is no the virus. So this court has it wrong. Yet people are going to go on the fact that it's been declared a non-vaccine. That's not the whole story. The CDC and definition is in breach of state power here on this whole thing. As I responded, it's on Twitter, ex-Twitter, to explain to us what's a better approach, I hope. I hope people pick it up. And officials weren't actually protecting anything but their own pocketbooks. Until it's gone, I suppose, and until they get caught. The former assistant city attorney at Atlanta, who was also a life advice broadcaster, has been jailed for 7 years after fraudulently obtaining approximately $15 million in COVID relief loans. Shalitha Robinson, 62, used illegally gained funds to splash out on luxuries such as a 10-carat diamond ring, Rolls Royce, and a motorbike. The former police officer had obtained the money under the Paycheck Protection Program, a federal stimulus program that was set up during the pandemic. All fraud, all the appropriations of which are fraud, probably treason, if we were to get right to it. People globally should have gotten COVID relief by relying on their due process protections in their local communicable disease law everywhere, and not these public officials. They all took advantage of it. Australian DNA contamination confirmed in Australia vials of Pfizer and Moderna not safe for humans. A part of the GMO proceedings and the allegations of the Pfizer-Moderna products contain excessive synthetic DNA contamination. That's synthetic. That's that lab-made stuff. With the contamination forms another, much more insidious form of GMO. There's your unintended consequences that go on. They don't know what they're doing here. After many Australian labs refused to conduct testing, we organized the Australian vials to be tested in Canada by Dr. Spechter, PhD, the first author of the paper confirming excessive DNA contamination on Canadian vials. Dr. Spechter has provided an initial report to us, which is attachment 6 for your consideration. Dr. Spechter has confirmed excessive synthetic DNA contamination in Pfizer was over 350 times above per dose limits set by the TGA, 3,900% above, and over 200 times above per dose limits of Moderna, 19,900 above. But remember, this was such a heinous crime. The DOD wrote those contracts. These were not qualitative. These were not products that needed to follow quality constraints. They were not vaccines. They were bioweapons, and these aren't side effects that we're seeing. They're direct effects of a weapon, any weapon that was meant to kill or maim. I hope I've brought up something that allows you to see the world in a maybe different way, motivates you to get action, motivates you more importantly to protect yourself, learn to think forward of things a little bit more than what we're being told. Look through the news and see the notice and understand what there's underlying actions going on so that you can be prepared possibly. Maybe you can get involved. You can circumvent it because you're able to. You see it. You see what's going on, and you have a skill set that allows it to you. This has been BTWRLM 581. I'll be with you next week. Tech diffs for nature willing.
Echoes call, the hour is near. Behind the woodshed, the truth you'll hear. Every Sunday, the clock strikes 3. Hal's voice rolls like thunder, fierce and free. Pull up a chair, lean in close, listen to learn. Dose by dose, behind the woodshed, no stone unturned. Hal's words ignite, the airwaves burn. Stand up, listen, it's time to learn. Behind the woodshed, where truths are earned. Law, liberty, the spectrum wide, and Hal's court, no place to hide. A cannibal bass, ready to burst for unspoken truths and unquenchable thirst. Behind the woodshed, no stone unturned. Hal's words ignite, the airwaves burn. Stand up, listen, it's time to learn. Next week, heed the call, behind the woodshed standing tall.